In these talks, both the morning and the evening talks, we're trying to get toward in the direction of being healers. And in these morning talks, we're doing a very cursory survey of astrological homunculi and things that are like astrological homunculi. We're doing this to learn more about spiritual astrology, but we're learning very little in that regard. And we're learning more about physiology. We're trying to prepare ourselves to be healers. Now, in each of these talks, we're trying to look at homunculi with a different point of view. There should probably be 12 talks so that we would have 12 points of view, because 12 is the maximum number of points that you can have surrounding any other point. And this gives the 12 basic points of view. This is why we have 12 people, for example, on a jury. This is called the mathematics of close-packed structures. And anything that is a crystal is based on the 12 around the 13th, which automatically brings in the other Platonic solids. All right, that's all on the side. So we should have 12 points of view about 12 points of view, or we should have homunculi about homunculi. But instead of talking about 12, let's talk about 3. And this time we won't talk about a lofty transcendental trinity, but instead we'll be more down to earth and look at a practical trinity that I have found to be extremely helpful. Helpful for spiritual growth and helpful when counseling people. In this trinity, there are 3 members. There is sensitivity, knowledge, and gumption. There are people who are total representatives of each of these 3 members. For example, there are people who are purely sensitive, and they're sensitive to an astounding degree. You can blindfold them, and they'll run their hand over a sheet of paper or something, and they can tell you the colors that are on it, or they can tell you the figures that are on the sheet of paper or photo or whatever it is. Some of them are so sensitive, they can tell you when the planetary hours change, and they can tell you from what kind of hour it has changed from to what hour it is changing to. Now, such a person becomes a specialist, because we don't usually have time to develop everything in ourselves, and so we specialized. And when one specializes in sensitivity, what happens is the other things are not accentuated sufficiently. And so such a person is a sensitive, and that person is so sensitive that they know what's going on, or they are aware, or they are sensitive to what is going on, but they don't know what it means. And they don't have the gumption to do anything about it. Similarly, there are people who have enormous amounts of knowledge. They have got information about everything. But they don't have the sensitivity to understand whether that knowledge is relevant or not. Nor do they have the gumption in the form of willpower to act on that knowledge. To complete the trinity, there are people who have a lot of gumption, a lot of will, a lot of determination, but not sensitivity or knowledge. Now, those people are rarer. You find them only extremely rarely. But there are people who really get things done. Sometimes even people who get things done that shouldn't be done, because they don't have sensitivity, they're not compassionate, and they'll ride roughshod over other people's needs or other people's rights. This is the kind of person that sometimes becomes a sorcerer. Now, usually, a person has accentuation in two of these three qualities. Like most of the people that get involved with spiritual things have sensitivity and they have knowledge, but they don't have the gumption to do anything about it. And so what the ideal is, like in any form of differentiation, the ideal is to have balance. And if we have balance, then we can accomplish something. We can move forward spiritually. If we're sensitive to what is in the air, and we can knowledgeably know what it means, and we have the gumption to act on it, we will proceed. Now, this is something I learned a long, long time ago when I first, back in 1963, when I first started studying spiritual things, I had a large hospital bill. My introduction to the spiritual life came through an extreme illness. I was almost dead. I couldn't control my urine or anything like that anymore. I had a nephritis in my kidneys. And I came out of the hospital and I had a huge bill to pay. And so I went to the work for the Borden's Milk Company, washing milk trucks. They'd come in after their day's routes, which would be usually about the middle of the afternoon, and I'd take over and take all the trucks and wash them up and then charge up the coolers and things like that for the next day. And there was a break room where all the drivers would congregate, and most of them were pretty macho, and they were talking about prize fights and things like that. But there was one man that they made fun of. But that man had a reputation for being really, really remarkable. He got through his route faster than everybody else, but he didn't speed. And he was basically an Orthodox Christian. And what he had his reputation for is that when he would pull up his milk truck to a house, he would say to himself, "Well, I wonder if Mrs. Jones wants something extra today." And the still small voice would tell him something like, "Bring along a pint of whipping cream." And he'd go to the door and collect the bottles and leave the milk that he would normally leave there, and there would be a note, "Well, please leave whipping cream." And this intrigued me, because here was a man who didn't know about the Rosicrucian cosmic conception, and he wasn't especially well educated. Why was it that he could do these things that I couldn't do? And I studied him, and that's the conclusion I came to, that he had a balance between knowledge and the will to do something and sensitivity. And because of that, his spiritual life advanced, and so that it was in everything he did, even his everyday work. And since then, over the years, I have found that balance to be exceedingly important. It's like riding a bicycle. If we are balanced, we can go forward. If we're out of balance, we can't do it. We fall off or something of that type. Now, in the previous three talks, we have been knowledge-oriented. A school is supposed to be knowledge-oriented. And we've had some focus on sensitivity. In this talk, we'll again talk about knowledge and sensitivity, but with an eye to things that we can do, how we can begin to prepare ourselves, because we all want to be healers. Now, this doesn't mean that necessarily that we are going to be talking about any kind of healing modalities. In fact, in none of these talks are we going to do that specifically. We may mention things in this and in other talks, but we're not going to talk about different kinds of modalities. Review. The Rosicrucian philosophy does recommend, and it does discourage, practicing various types of modalities, but a lot of things aren't mentioned. But principles are given for a healthy spiritual life, and those principles that are given can guide us to understand what works in what we can participate in and what we can't participate in. Now, this series of talks is meant to be a astrological or a quasi-astrological series of talks to parallel the philosophical talks which we're doing in the evening. And the evening talks are certainly more important than these in terms of understanding the principles that are important to healing. Now, it is because these two talks are somewhat interdependent information from one series is helpful for the other and vice versa. If you can't be at the evening talks, or if you go to the evening talks and can't always be here for the morning talks, I can get recordings to you. I've been recording everything, and so if you want them, we can get them. Eventually, they'll all be available for free when I get that website up, which I hope to do by January. Now, for the remainder of this talk, we're going to be speaking about healing in the complex of the physical and vital bodies, which are closely interlaced, especially the biological ethers of the physical body, which is where most problems occur with regard to health. We're not going to talk about healing in the desire body or in the mind, except maybe tonight or tomorrow night in the evening series. Now, as usual, what we're going to be doing in this talk is going to be very fleeting. It's going to be partial. It's going to be fragmentary, because we only have so much time and there are only a few things that we can go into. I don't even know if I'm capable of a comprehensive or a thorough study of this, and if I were, it would probably be very long. It would probably take several years. All right, let's look at homunculi in a diagnostic sense. That's what we've been doing. We've been looking at homunculi and how they produce illnesses. We have noted that the divine plan and that the divine human are amazingly analogical.
Question?
Yes.
Can you define your word
homunculi? We did that a long time ago. A homunculus means little human being. And the zodiac is the cosmic human. This is the human, and all of the spirals within spirals are little homunculi. Yeah, that's the way we're using it. All right. So we're talking about principles that are analogous and functional on many levels. Spirals within spirals within spirals, all analogous to each other. Even the layout of the world and the bodies of the humans, of us as humans, follow that same kind of pattern. Even the way we live our lives. That's a series of talks I would like to do also. I'd like to talk about all of the different cycles, the spirals that we have in daily life, some of which last 1/10,000th of a second. And then relate that to the life cycle of 1,000 years. It's a really interesting thing. The human dense body and all of our other bodies are living representations of the solar cosmos, the solar creation that we have gone through. We are representations of it. We are products of it. And we represent it. We are now at the stage that we are becoming creative in this work. We are creative apprentices. And sometimes we err in applying the principles of creation. Because of our errors, cause and consequence sees that we are given back exactly what we need as feedback in order to grow. And very often, when we have erred by misthinking or mis-emoting or mis-motivating or misacting, it comes back to us as illness. Our bodies are an expression of what we are doing right now in our evolutionary work. There are other causes of illness. We've talked a little bit about them. We've talked about evolutionary illnesses as opposed to destined illnesses from our own misdeeds. But they're primarily secondary. Most of the illnesses are reactions to actions that we have put into working. Now, the workings of cause and consequence, because consequence is just the other face or the other side of the coin of a cause, are perfect. We get exactly what we need exactly when we need it. And so we can correct our mistakes, and the pain and irony of the situation is so perfect that we have to laugh when things come back to us, because it's just as it should be. Now, for this reason, usually the causes of our conditions are pretty obvious. If we really want to learn, and if we listen to our intuition, we can usually figure out why things are. However, at this time in evolution, we're so deeply involved in matter, and we're so blinded by materialism, and the length of time between the initiation of a cause or initiation of a cluster of causes and the consequence that becomes an illness is so long, and in the whole process, the misapplied principle, the applications that are misapplications have gone through so many changes, it's not always easy to recognize what was the original cause. It's like one of those party games that you play that one person says something and then they pass it on to the next person and they pass it on to the next person. By the time it comes back to the first person, it seems all altogether different. And that happens in our evolution. So, understanding causes is not always an easy thing. And there are reasons for this. One is, as we just said, we are blinded by our materialism. We don't think about all of the little inflections of spirit in ourselves, and even though they're subtle, they are very powerful, and how they produce the stew that we get ourselves into. It's so bad now that people are so materialistic that they don't even believe that they're responsible for the things that happen to them, especially the important thing like illnesses. They think it's a foolish superstition to believe in cause and consequence. And we're so outward, we're overly outward, that we think that disease is something that comes to us from outside. And we also then start thinking that the cure for disease must come from outside. So there must be some medicine out there that takes care of it. And so we view ourselves something like test tubes. It's like, we pour the disease in and then we pour the medicine in and we have little to do with it. There's no responsibility. The body is nothing more than a battleground for the pathogens and the medicines to fight it out. Another reason why it is difficult to figure out or get to the causes of our errors is our egoism. We want what we want, and we're bound and determined to get what we want, and we turn a blind eye or a deaf ear to the things that could help us. Sometimes we want to indulge in things, and we want to indulge in them so much that we're willing to take what comes of it. You know, like I'm willing to take this much pain in order to have this piece of banana cream pie. And there are people that really think that way. You hear it a lot. Now, we may have tendencies in ourselves to these ways. We probably do, because though we like to fashion ourselves as being different from everyone else, we're really not. We're like everyone else, except that we're trying to change it. All of us, each and every person in this room, is trying to improve themselves, to learn from mistakes, and to help things along creatively. Nonetheless, we still have illnesses, and we talked about that last evening, why illnesses are different for spiritual aspirants than they are for people on the street. But sometimes the root causes of our illnesses are not easy to diagnose. Sometimes our inability to diagnose is due to complexity. Sometimes it is, again, due to that long morphological distance between cause and consequences. In any of these cases, it's not always a simple matter. I've studied astrology now for something like 47 years. And by far, astrodiagnosis, because of the homunculi, and because of one thing being a result of something else and it not being directly obvious, it's the hardest thing I've ever studied. It's really, really hard. Even with intuition, it's hard. Now, astrology is an important tool, especially in the diagnosis of the etiology, how an illness develops. As a manifestation of the principle of analogy, homunculi, whether they are astrological or non-astrological homunculi, are very, very helpful. Now, these are both splendid tools, but even with them, the task is not easy. But eventually, we do come to a diagnosis. Sometimes the diagnosis even comes from the biochemical methods of medicine. But we do come to a diagnosis. When we have the diagnosis, we come to a different set of problems. Some of these problems are spiritual, some of them are material. We don't have time to go into the more spiritual problems at this time, though some of that will be talked about in the evening talks. But they're not simple. I have an example from my own life. About 30 years ago, I went through a major illness, and the acute part of the illness was 4 years in duration. And after the illness was over, it took another 5 years. In all, it took 9 years of pondering to understand the primary cause for that illness. Not to understand it mentally, but to understand it with my feelings, you know, so that it moved me to want to change. And it's been 30 years since then, and in those 30 years, I still have not really changed all of the primary causes of that illness. I'm working on it and I'm making progress, especially in the last year. I've made a lot of progress. But what we're talking about, even in candidates for initiation, we're talking about processes that are slow. They're hard. We're told in the Rosicrucian philosophy that to become initiated becomes harder and harder all the time because things are speeding up for everyone, and to overtake and supersede something that is changing that fast is not an easy task. Instead of working with these kinds of spiritual problems, we're going to try to work with the problems which arise in that complex of the physical and vital bodies. Since the vital body is causally antecedent, meaning to say, in proceeding from the higher causes, from the thoughts to the desires to the vital actions and the physical forms, the things occur first, or they are causally antecedent to things that happen in the physical body. So if we can make changes in the vital body, we can make changes that get more behind the conditions in the physical body if we want to change them, or if we want to eradicate them or supplant them with something else. We're going to work with only one problem of the vital body, and how the understanding of homunculi can help us to solve that problem. What we're going to talk about is a problem of transport, or a problem of delivery. We're speaking about it only in the physical etheric complex. And when we speak about this, we're speaking about ordinary people like you and I. We're not talking about people who are full-blown magnetic healers. As an aside, there is a gradation of the capability of magnetic healing among all people. Some people have a strong animal magnetism. They have vital bodies that are very strong and they have control of them. And they can draw off energy, or they can project their own energy into someone else, and they can be quite effective. At the other end of the spectrum, we have people that are extremely low in vitality. And if you're very careful, you can make your way through life anyway. Earl Cooper will tell you that he's of that type. He's of a low vitality, but he's exceedingly careful in the way he lives his life. And because of that, he has as full a life as anyone else, even with very low vitality. Now, the basic stamp of the vital body is determined by our past experience with vital bodies. It's built into the archetype of this lifetime. And it is based on the seed atom of the vital body. And that basic stamp of vitality cannot be changed a lot. However, there is always something that we can do to change any of our bodies to some extent, and that includes the vital body. Very few people can change their archetype, but by avoiding practices that weaken us or vitiate us, one can be pretty vital throughout their life. For example, the life ether can be replenished, and that's what's necessary for the basic biological function, is the life ether. That can be replenished by using raw fresh vegetable juices or raw milk straight out of the animal. If you can get the smaller the amount of the time, the more vitality there will be in it. Good habits and having rhythms in life organize and strengthen the vital body. Now, among these habits is that, among the things that we can do with a stronger vital body or a vital body that we're taking care of, is we can do various things in etheric healing. Now, an invisible helper, which we're going to be talking about this evening and tomorrow evening quite a bit, an invisible helper functioning outside of the body does not have the life ether with them. The life ether remains back with the body, taking care of the body. So an invisible helper can't take a charge from their own personal vital body and put it into someone else to revitalize them, because it isn't with them. They can't do that. However, because the etheric panacea is polarized, the panacea that has been collected and concentrated and transformed into a miraculous substance, that can be handled magnetically by an invisible helper. And if you're lucky enough to do that once or twice in a lifetime, your life is forever changed, because that is an experience like no other experience. So it is by learning to control our ethers, even as unconscious invisible helpers, we can handle the etheric healing panacea. We're going to talk about that a little bit also. These last lectures are going to, tonight and tomorrow night, are going to have a lot of material, I guess, because there's so much to catch up on. There are a lot of things that the invisible helper can do that we can't do in the body. The invisible helper can materialize an etheric hand right within the body of someone else. I've had friends that have been worked on in that way. They'd wake up in the middle of the night and they would see hands on them right inside of their body manipulating them. It was really quite something. But when we're talking about things inside the body, we're talking about magnetic healers. The term magnetic healing goes all the way back to Antoine Mesmer. Mesmerism. You have to correct me, Jean, when I get the French wrong.
That's fine.
Magnetic healers are usually people who have very strong vital bodies, and they are trained to feel and direct the etheric current that flows through their vital bodies. Since the ethers are polarized, they are subject to polarized attraction and repulsion. Thus, they can be used to draw off stagnant and thick miasmatic ethers that are causing a condition that it's very hard to be healed from. Also, by that same polarization, someone can take energy from their own vital body, if they're careful about how much and have control, and inject it into someone else and give them a charge, a loan, until the person can get up on their own again. It must be mentioned when we're talking about this that we're talking about active magnetic healing, because there are various types of magnetic healing. We're talking with this, we're talking about active magnetic healing. It is something that is done as an act of willful consciousness of the person controlling their vital body. And the effects are immediate. The healing takes place, and the change in the patient is known immediately. There are other forms of magnetic healing. Some of them are quite passive. They don't involve the personal vital body except as a conduit. Usually these are the people that use one hand as a drawing hand and one hand as a projecting hand, and they align themselves and they draw from the magnetic or the etheric field of the earth and try to put energy into another person. They don't put it there, they let it flow there. This sort of thing, because it involves passivity, is not recommendable. It is done, and I have friends who do that sort of thing, and it gives me weepers jeepers when they do. And I think it's because of the purity of their intentions and the purity of their character that they can do it, but it is not advised by the Rosicrucian philosophy. Now, most of us are not full-fledged, trained magnetic healers. Most of us are not wakingly conscious invisible helpers, so that we have continuous consciousness, except for that second when we fall asleep and that second right before we come back into the physical body. But just because we are not full-fledged magnetic healers doesn't mean that we can't work toward the goal of becoming a magnetic healer. There's no way that we're going to become a magnetic healer unless we do work toward it. It's not a matter that one day you are not a healer and the next day you are. So a little bit of practice, as long as we're careful and as long as we know what we're doing, a little bit of practice is not a bad thing. You know, there's plenty of suffering going around, and any little thing that we can do to ameliorate it is a very fine thing. There are other things we can do and should do. We can educate others into better living. I don't think it's a wise idea to go to the supermarket and point out in somebody's basket, don't eat that or that or that, because it's not good for you. But there are enough people that are open that will listen to things. We can also study herbalism and other modalities that are positive modalities. And we can practice them to some extent as long as we are careful. That's the thing. Know thyself. If you know your limitations, and if you know when you're acting out of character, if you're acting in a way that is beyond yourself, if you have that kind of self-knowledge, you can gradually learn these kinds of things. We can bring people to invisible helpers. There are a lot of people that are open to hearing about invisible helpers, and if they don't hear about it, they're not going to apply for that kind of healing, and they're going to have to suffer. So these are things that we can do, and it's important. What we do with our spiritual lives is probably much more important than our personal habits or whether we're a vegetarian or something like that. The really important thing is the service work. It's what we do to help others. Now, even though these things are important, we still want to participate. We all want hands-on. We don't want to just sit in a room like this and listen to talks. We want to do something. And that's good. That's the way it's supposed to be. We're like little children then, because little children want to grow up to be able to be something and do something. So, there may be breakthrough times in our lives, but those breakthrough times only come at the end of a lot of work and practice. Well, we're on the last page of notes already, and we haven't gotten to any astrological homunculi yet. All right. If we have used astrology and astrological homunculi, we can understand what the problem is for the patient. Suppose, for example, there is problems with an internal organ like the pancreas or the liver, or maybe even a little pocket, a little sinus somewhere. And suppose from astrology, we have come to a reasonable understanding of the psychological cause or the psycho-spiritual cause for it. Also from astrology, we can find times that are propitious for delivering effective healing energy. So the question is right now, how do we do this if we are not full-fledged magnetic healers? Now, usually, the most effective way of delivering healing energy is through the hands. There are several reasons for this, but the most important is that in the centers of the palms, there are openings, so to speak, into the currents of the vital body. At one time in the very, very distant past, we were human-like, but we weren't at all human as we are now. We were more like single-celled animals, and we were bisexual, male and female. But as we came into this material world, it became necessary that we spend part of our energy for procreating and building new physical bodies, and part of it for creative work, for evolutionary advancement, and this meant a separation of the sexes. So when we were single cell like, we had a creative nucleus, just like an egg, where in the nucleus, in the yolk, is where all of the creative activity takes place. And we had a field of living vital energy. When this became divided by an internal polarization, there became a differentiation that some forms were polarized one way to produce male bodies, and some forms were polarized the opposite way to produce female bodies, so that cooperatively we could do the work of procreation and still have energy left over for internal spiritual work. Now, at the same time there was this polar differentiation, there was also an opening up, so that if we looked at ourselves with our current bodies as we were then, we were all together inwardly. And then what happened is that we opened up and we're gradually becoming more outward. Now the nucleus became divided. One half of the nucleus of the creative nucleus is associated with the genitals and the sacrum. The other half became associated with the voice box and with the cranium. And both of these are creative centers. The flow of energy, the white of the egg, was opened up. And so that when we were opened up, where the break occurred, it was in the palms of the feet and in the palms of the hand. And with our internal consciousness, if we put ourselves into the energy or vitality of our bodies, we can direct with our consciousness that energy. And that's what we're talking about with magnetic healing. Everybody with some work, it takes a lot of concentration, and it takes concentration not on things outward, but concentration on things within our inner being, that we actually feel the energy. And after a while, you begin to feel in the palms of your hand, you begin to feel a prickly kind of heat. Sometimes, just before you're getting ready to leave the body, You learn the same thing if you sense it in your feet. And naturally, without even having to be taught, if you go into deep concentration, you can feel a pulling that comes from all of them toward the center of your being. These are just things that happen naturally to everyone that has gone along the way. So, we are at the point, you know, if you can tell, you can either sense things from the ethers or you can project energy. They are both outgoing and incoming. And in that, they are both very important functions. You can learn to feel the energy of other people. You can also learn to direct the energy of other people, and you can learn to give some of your own energy. And all of these things are things that are experiential. So we're talking about the circulation of energy. Now, we spoke last evening about the circulatory system. And yesterday we talked about the blood as a homunculus and went into the many things of the blood that are ruled by the different signs of the zodiac, and that was all helpful. Now, there are other etheric transport systems in the body, most notably the nervous system. Now, in the nervous system, there are two types of activities. There are afferent nerves and there are efferent nerves. Afferent nerves are nerves that take things from without as sensations and bring them back to the brain. Efferent nerves take creative impulses from the brain and take them out to either produce action or in some way respond to an external condition. Now, the nerves have an etheric flow going through them. Now, basically, almost all nerves are two-way streets. There are some things that are one-way streets. Usually it is efferent nerves that are usually one way, that they don't allow things to come back through them. The ethers, as we just said, are all two-way streets. They are used for giving and for drawing. Therefore, since every organ and everything in the interior of the body is affected by these nerves, the nerves represent a way to work on every organ in the body, especially if energy impulses, vital impulses, can be sent down the efferent nerves to different organs. They can be stimulated or calmed, or they can be helped.